Oh God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Salute. Enjoy some buzzball. Cheers, Sean.
Salute.
Salute. I mean, it kind of just tastes like a white Russian.
It's not terrible, actually.
Pretty much is a white Russian.
Yeah.
Except it's orange wine.
Wow.
It's a very weird concept as a base for a beverage.
For a chocolate drink.
For a chocolate drink. Here's your orange wine base.
Your 15% alcohol chocolate milk.
What is happening over there?
Well, okay. So quite a few recordings ago, Nick, for some reason, brought buzz balls, which I'm sure you have seen in like the gas station.
Yes. Oh, you can get them on the airplanes too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can get those on an airplane?
That's 100%.
Flying Spirit?
You can get them on Spirit. You can get them on Frontier. You can get them on Allegiant. You can get them on all the low cost carriers.
Yeah. Nice. So then when I was in Leavenworth, I was wandering around and I sent Nick a picture. I was like, well, next time we've got to up our game a little bit. And it was what he's about to show you, a Buzzball Biggie.
It's 1.5 liters.
Yeah, this podcast is going to devolve real quickly.
Well, it depends if we drink all three of those Buzzball Biggies.
I may be leaving my car on the side of the road and you're bringing home.
That would imply this podcast has ever evolved into anything.
Yeah, that's true. We've never really been on the rails.
It evolved into something that lasted as long as it has. So yeah. It involved in something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just sheer stick-to-itiveness. And Peter not letting us skip a week.
You mean stubbornness? Stubbornness is the correct word, Sean.
I like stick-to-itiveness.
Hey, who's a podcast host here?
Yeah, Michael. We get you're to make up the words.
Now, bitch.
Fine.
Yeah.
Considering you've never listened to an episode of our podcast, you have no idea what you're in for, do you?
I've listened to 5.
Hey, all right.
Really? So when did that happen?
The first 5.
Oh, you picked poor.
And then I realized, No, I don't really need to hear Sean and Nick talk about Nick Cage anymore. I listen to Sean and Nick at the bar almost every day. So, you know,
Yeah, but you don't get your fill of me now that I'm in Portland. How else are you getting?
Maybe I'll go back and listen to them.
I recommend going backwards now.
Yeah. Start from the beginning. Yeah.
No. Start from the end and go backwards.
I will promise you one thing.
Except for the podcast episode. That one's weird to do reverse.
I will promise you one thing. I will not listen to this episode that we're recording now.
That's fair.
Because I hate listening to myself, whether it's in an interview or anything. I just, no. Well,
join the long list of other people who hate listening to you.
Yeah, I know you're on it.
Yeah, you're really only here for one reason.
Just because you made me watch that god awful film.
No, to answer for the Italians.
Oh, I get it. This is a racist heritage thing.
Actually, because we've decided long ago that Italians are not people. So
my nonna will come after you. I don't need to go after Uncle Sal here.
We have a strong stance in this podcast about this.
Yep.
I don't even remember why it started, but we really dug into it. It's just like, Italians
Captain Corelli's mandolin, I think.
It was Captain Corelli.
Yeah, that tracks.
The other war movie.
That tracks.
Yeah. He at least did an accent in that one. This one was really not even an attempt.
No.
Oh, I mean, he was like 25 when he did this movie. I mean,
yeah, but he's done accent work at this point. I mean, well,
at 25, really?
Well, so, I mean, previously he had done an accent. It's a very like weird New Yorker kind of accent for Vampire's Kiss. But he's doing a voice, certainly. Yeah. So like he can commit. He just didn't commit to being poorly Italian.
I don't think anybody ever like asked him to do a voice for this one, though.
Why did he get into this movie?
I don't know. This is a very strange one.
I mean, I gotta surmise that he must have been dating some Italian chick who knew the director and wanted to impress her.
Maybe. There's very little facts out there. Sean, what were you gonna say?
I would assume, to Nick's point about no one having asked him to do an accent, I assume someone asked him not to, because I think his go-to response would be an accent. He does love his accent work.
Yeah, maybe Boston Cop just really didn't play.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Welcome back to Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, with my co-host,
Nick.
And our producer,
Peter, hello.
And our friend,
Michael, hello. Yeah.
Welcome aboard, Michael.
Thank you.
You arguably have more on mic experience than us. No, we probably have more. We got hours on this shit.
Yeah, you guys probably have more than I do.
We got days worth
of our voices.
Except I have TV experience where you don't.
That's true. Yeah. But that's because we're heinously ugly.
And that's because I do politics.
It's only because Pornhub wouldn't let me put up a sponsorship thing with them.
Thank God.
It was going to be a great deal.
I'm sure.
We should have done it like when South Park had Saddam Hussein. You know, where it's just the head with a little flappy jaw.
Oh, yeah.
It's just our faces doing that the whole time.
Like just talking. Do a jib jab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But like a porny jib jab.
Of course.
Yeah.
This that makes sense
our,
to me.
That makes our pee episode a lot weirder.
No way, guy.
So, Nick, what do we do on this podcast?
We mostly talk over each other, tell pee jokes and. Mm-hmm. Make fun of Hayden.
Yep.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, I just left Hayden over at the bar and he told me, they're going to talk about piss for the first 5 minutes like they did with me.
I mean, we can. You guys want to do piss talk?
Here we are.
Here we are.
Just wait till you get older and it slows down.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this movie only brings up poop talk.
That's true.
It does. It does.
Yeah. That one guy, he's real regular at 15:30 every day.
I'm about to shit my pants.
Yep.
I just started the new episodes of King of the Hill. Hat tip to Sean for reminding me that was coming out. And it starts off with Hank Hill struggling to piss in an airplane bathroom.
No,
it's real. When you're taller than 6 foot, you know, getting in those airplane bathrooms it's a real problem.
Plus, he has a narrow urethra. You have to kind
of, do like this. And
how many times a night are you up to pee at this point, Michael?
It depends on how much beer I've drank in that day. Mm-hmm. So if I haven't drank a lot of beer, it's one. If I have drank a lot of beer, it's 2 to 3.
Yeah. What about Buzzball Biggies?
Yeah. How many?
I don't know. We'll find out. We're going
to. You tell us tomorrow.
We've got three of them here. Are we going to get through each of them? All of them?
God, no.
Wait, you don't each have your own?
Those have to be future investments.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're passing that down the line to future guests.
I was really enjoying the joke as I loaded them onto the counter and then the guy started ringing them up and I was like, oh no, I made a mistake. But I can't back out now. God, this thing's delicious.
I mean, that's why I had to pick the Choco because, the Lime-a-Rita was going to be boring.
That's true. I mean, the berry one or this one made the most sense. So
yeah.
I feel pleased.
Berries that are, bright blue somehow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Blueberries.
Yeah, blueberries.
Yeah, but they're like more purple than that color.
Yeah. Yeah, they're red on the inside.
It's a very natural color. Don't worry about it.
Also, blue is a flavor. Just in its own right.
Oh, yeah. Blue is definitely a flavor.
But this blue is raspberry.
Yeah, this blue is cherry berry lemonade, which doesn't make any sense. Oh, man. Okay. So, A Time to Kill, 1989. Or sorry, not A Time to Kill, 1989.
Just Time to Kill.
Time to Kill, 1989.
Right.
Big difference. One has Matthew McConaughey, a real actor.
Yeah.
Hey, Nicolas Cage is a real actor.
He just gets paid for acting.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a little rough around the edges, but Michael, why don't you walk us through what the fuck this movie is?
Yeah, give John a synopsis.
Yeah, John. Okay. John called us out. He's correct, but.
What did John call you out on? Not giving synopses?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So, I mean, I wrote down the description that was in Amazon Prime, which is, the streaming service that I watched it in. And
not an advertisement yet.
No. I wish it was. I wish you guys got paid to do this stuff.
That'd be sweet.
But,
that makes four of us.
Yeah. So the description, according to Amazon Prime. In 1935, when Ethiopia was invaded by the Italian army, Lieutenant Silvestri, played by Nicolas Cage, sets off for the nearest camp hospital to take care of a toothache. En route, he meets a young Ethiopian woman, which leads to a tragic course of events that devastates his entire life. So that's their description.
What of her life?
And I really like that description for this film because it gives you just like a couple key things like Italians suck. this guy's got a toothache and something is going to change the course of this film.
Yeah.
It like leaves a lot open and it drew me into that. So go ahead. Tell us what.
And so he goes, he has this toothache. He goes to this other Italian army post where they're building a bridge, trying to find the doctor. This other guy says, oh, you've got to go to the main camp and here's the quick way. Don't take the road. He goes the quick way. He shows up at this little waterfall lake and there's this beautiful Ethiopian naked girl in it. So what does he do?
I would stress girl.
Yeah, definitely not.
So that's another strike against the Italians. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Italians didn't exactly wrap themselves in glory in the 1930s, so you know, we
I don't think he wrapped himself in anything in this movie. It's gonna come up later.
Well, I mean, the girl tries to wrap herself up, but we'll discuss that in a second. And so he, you know, the girl gets out of the lake and she's butt naked, and you know, he then goes and decides, oh well, she's cute, I'm gonna rape her. 15 minutes in the movie in a rape scene. I'm like, do I just turn it off now? No, I've gotta commit, I've gotta watch this whole thing.
Now, you could have come in here and done the power play of like, you stopped at that 15 minute mark and then you just make up the rest of the story and we're all like,
Yeah. I could have. And that thought did cross my mind and I decided, no, I'd stick with the bit to see where this was going. And so then within 10 minutes,
a rare bit of integrity from an Italian.
Hey, you know, I'm half Irish. The Italian's only a quarter.
That's not making it better. I just proves you're willing to drink a buzzball.
100%. I won't tell you why my other quarter is because that goes with the Italian. It's German. But, you know,
oh, hey, boy,
three drunk, stubborn, stupid. Yeah, whatever. So then 10 minutes later, he kills her.
I mean, it was accidental, but we'll get back to that.
He kills her.
It was.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about that part, too.
We can talk about the inferences the movie makes in there, but he does kill her. So we've got a rapist, a murder, and, you know, I mean, great way to first 20 minutes of a movie. And so there's really, you know, all these little scenes of this major and that lieutenant and this person who all could have reported him at any point. And
it would have fucked up his shore leave.
It would have fucked up his shore leave to get back to Italy to go see his wife. Mm-hmm. So he rapes a girl even though he's married. I mean, we...
It's Italian.
Italians. We're romantic right now. So, you know...
Have fun editing this one, Peter.
Yeah, it's a doozy already.
And he ends up on the boat to go back to Italy with the entire Italian troops because they've, quote, won the war and no one gave a crap about what he did to the native girl because, you know, that's how colonizers work.
Yeah, pretty much.
So there's your synopsis, John.
At one point, he thinks he has leprosy.
Yeah, I mean, so I rewrote the description for Amazon in case anyone's interested.
I do want to hear your rewrite.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the rewrite, you know, it starts out the same. In 1935, when Ethiopia is being invaded by the Italian army, Lieutenant Silvestri rapes and murders an Ethiopian child and tries to cover it up from his superiors. What ensues is a series of encounters with army officers that could report him but don't, and Lieutenant Silvestri departs for Italy with no repercussions as colonizers don't care about the rape and murder of indigenous women.
Nice. Do you think they're going to accept it?
Better description? No, I don't, because no one would watch that movie.
Yeah, well, facts aren't very interesting. You did leave out possibly the best scene in the film.
Oh, the major and his poop.
Well, no. I know it's overshadowed by the whole lake rape. When he's walking along and he sees that chameleon and he's like, this is also my favorite quote. And he just looks at it and he's like, smoke?
Want
and
smoke?
He picks up the chameleon and just puts a cigarette in its mouth and lets it go.
So one of the only notes I saw about this movie is that in the UK, they cut 17 seconds out of this movie and it was that scene. Yeah, nothing else.
No objections anywhere else with this film. Yeah.
Nothing else. Just that. We're not fucking around with a cigarette in a lizard's mouth.
I think they actually have pretty strong like laws against like animals smoking.
They do. I mean, PETA, yeah. PETA started in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The way that chameleon just held it, just a big ass rolly.
Just like that thing had to have died so quickly after that.
It's a chameleon. It was going to die anyways. It was Africa.
I mean, come on. We all knew that cigarette wasn't lit. There was no smoke coming off. It was a prop. I mean, you know, but yeah, it was funny. I agree. I appreciate
it. Like, what a weird thing to do, though. You just encounter natural wildlife and you're like, I'm going to put a smoke in your mouth.
To be fair, in the 30s without like YouTube, I would
that was about the funniest thing you could do.
Cigarettes in animals' mouths. Hey,
check it out. Bird with a cigarette.
To be fair, as someone old enough not to remember days with internet, you know, we did discuss living in London, putting, you know, Alka-Seltzer in the bird feed for the pigeons in Trafalgar Square. So I can't say that I ever actually did that. I also can't say I never did that. So, you know,
fair enough.
Yeah, they can't hear your wink on our audio podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and statute of limitations if a bird eats Alka-Seltzer, you know, birds can't burp.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it just builds up in their stomach. Uh-huh. Oh, we knew this in Oregon too.
Yeah.
We had seagulls. They suck.
Birds in general suck.
Fuck you, Pete.
Yeah. My feeling on birds is well known.
So this movie's kind of split up into two different narrative chunks. There's the friend Mario, who is recounting this tale of what happened. And he's just a narrator at this, like in the beginning and at the end. He kind of bookends the film with like, hey, this is a story from the war as it was like told to me, basically. Then it goes into Nicolas Cage's story as it was told to Mario. And this is all dramatized in color. And then, you know, his book ended at the end with Mario again being like, and, you know, that's how things went down. And I never saw him again. What's that movie?
Banger like, of an ending.
The one with the kids and the train.
Goonies.
No. Goonies doesn't have a train. No, that's a boat. Say anything.
It's got Will Wheaton in it.
It does have Will Wheaton in it.
It does.
Yeah.
Stand by me.
Stand by me. Yeah, I was close. I had an S at the beginning.
You were close.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. It doesn't have Nick Cage. So it's got like a real Stand By Me thing going with the whole like, oh, and then they fade into the history. So like with the story that Nicolas Cage's character, Enrico, tells, it's like, oh, he goes off and, you know, has the toothache. So he has to leave 6 hours before the convoy that was going to take them. So, which I can sympathize with, toothaches suck. And oh boy, when he finally gets to that camp and they pull that tooth out and it's just like some forceps that have been in
heated.
Yeah. Just sitting there in a flame. And it's like, I don't envy you. He's open like,
is up. Going to hurt.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
we did get a good Nicolas Cage scream out of
it. It was good.
It's true. Yeah.
Amazingly short and weird cuts in this movie, too. Like directorially, it's very strange.
Yeah.
No, like that scream and then it's just immediately cut off and it's just talking next scene.
It's very 80s Italian European sort of style.
Yeah. The
really mashed.
The filming felt very bad. European in it.
Yeah.
So like he leaves to go find this doctor. Goes to a construction, like his truck crashes, goes to a construction site, and some dude who's hella sketchy is like, oh yeah, don't walk along the road, go into the bush.
And what does he do with that guy? He puts a cigarette in his mouth.
Yeah, it's true. He gives him a cigarette. So we have an established like series of actions where he puts cigarettes in things. It's good for him.
It's when he stops doing that everything goes wrong.
That's true.
Well, you know, rations. You only get so many cigarettes.
I don't know. I don't think there was a scene that went by where he wasn't smoking.
Yeah.
Right, because he rationed for himself.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That chameleon got the last good one. Last freebie.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well.
You got to treat the animals nice than you treat yourself.
So, like, yeah, all of this is just how he presents it.
He is an unreliable narrator, right? Yeah. Like, he makes himself out to be sort of not heroic, but not like a super bad guy. Right. Yeah. Even though he has committed horrible crimes, he's sort of like, shit just happens. Crime of being
Italian.
Right. I'm Italian. You know, here it is. And
oh, woe is me.
Yeah. And like. He definitely shot that girl.
Right.
But was it truly the ricochet because he was shooting at hyenas?
Yeah,
ostensibly.
In his retelling of it, he's shooting at a hyena or a jackal or whatever to like scare it away. and a ricochet bounces back and hits the girl.
Right.
In the stomach.
In the stomach.
But then later,
and he ostensibly he says,
ices her.
Well, yeah,
well, yeah, we find that out later. But his original story was, oh, and then she died and then I came back to camp.
Right, because he asks his buddy, you know, how can you survive a gut shot?
How long?
Can you survive a gut shot? You know,
I mean, also in his retelling, he's honest about the rape, and then the immediate next scene is her all like, "Let me hold your hand." And
yeah, I love you.
Just, yeah, being very
something
like,
about daddies.
Just it's just all types of just uncomfortable.
And I think having lived through the 80s. That movie probably would have played a little better, and that scene would have probably played a little better than how we look at it in a modern time construct.
Yeah, I mean, Revenge of the Nerds was a thing, right?
Yeah, you know? Right. I mean, this one was just way more overt than you saw in other 80s movies, for sure. Right?
Yeah, this one had a visible
"I'm going to rape you," and there was a visible "no." And
in Revenge of the Nerds, there was trickery involved.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And in Porky's, they call it a tallywhacker.
God. So
that's a lost word.
You know, this one was just way more overt, which, yeah, coming out of the Italians doesn't strike me as, unusual.
Also, I was just rewatching the beginning of this film before we got on. And yeah, we have the thing with the woman at the lake. And then he says that he sees what he believes to be her family and some type of procession come through, and then it cuts back to the present. Well, the present as it's being told from where he's telling it. Then the bridge site has been destroyed.
Attacked by the Ethiopians who the Italians are trying to colonize. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they go through, and while they're like trying to hunt down the attackers, they find the bodies of all the people in that procession for the most part, and her town.
Well, and the thing that I think was missed was, and wasn't very well narrated in the movie, was there was the bit where they were talking about, oh, this special division of Italian troops were coming to the campsite, but we better get there first. And it's very clear that quote special division would have been the Italian version of the SS, and that all the dead villagers were reprisals for the attack on the bridge construction site. That was something that wasn't very clear, but I understood from, you know, watching way too many war movies in my childhood.
Being Italian, you just knew.
No, it's no, that war movies. You're watching a lot. You watch a lot of war movies when you were in the 80s. Yeah. And
because Sean, were you thinking that he did those murders?
That was kind of like an open question I had, was like, did he kill those people, like those people as well?
I was curious about it too, because it was very specifically like, I'm looking at that face and now they're dead. I'm looking at that face and now they're dead.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, I mean, it definitely later in the movie played that way.
But later in the movie, someone says, well, if you didn't kill her, she'd be dead now because of the reprisals. There was that line later in the movie.
I will admit, I had a really hard time. I started this movie last night and I was just like, nope, can't do this. So I watched it this morning, but I watched it in two halves. So I picked up where the movie kind of shifts into like more of a like screwball, like I'm leaving the military kind of story.
Yeah, part of what I liked about that piece of the arc was that he did seem to be going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which did make me think about Vampire's Kiss.
Well, because he
he thought he had leprosy, and
yeah, because he was feverish because he didn't have leprosy. His cut that he got when he fell over and cut his hand on a rock
was infected.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they didn't know these things in the 30s.
And he had that doctor's book that said probably leprosy.
Yeah.
To say it. Penicillin was invented in 28. Yeah, they knew it.
Did the Italians have it?
Yeah.
Oh, the Italians were the first to get penicillin.
Yeah, they're a bunch of whiny little bitches. Of course they got penicillin.
Oh, I was going to say rapists.
Well, that too, but you know.
Got to clean up after.
Clean up.
Yeah.
I do like, of all the people who he thought was like, of all the reprisal for like him thinking that people were coming after him the whole time, there's no repercussion for him trying to kill the doctor.
Yeah, that was weird, but he did give a fake name. So
he gave a fake name and ran away.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the leprosy of it all. He's got this cut and it's, you know, kind of infected and it looks real fucking shitty. It's on his hand. And when he's tooling around with the black market guy, the guy who runs the black market.
Mario and then the major.
Yeah, the major.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Major.
They swing by and like Mario goes to try to hit on a couple ladies. And what you see from the back is like them showing Mario their hand or whatever. And Mario's like, ugh, and runs away. And it's like, oh, those. The major is just like, haha, those girls all have leprosy. And you can tell because they all wear white turbans. All the white turban girls have leprosy. So Enrico is
flashback.
Yeah. Enrico is just like, oh my God, that girl I handled the blood of and killed. She totally had a white turban. So now he's convinced that he has leprosy. And that's where like the whole movie is kind of hinged on this thought. Like that's the whole like mystery of it all at this point.
Which I think could be a really effective movie, but they didn't do a great job with it.
Right. And I liked that because it kind of had the same sort of tie and feel as like Vampire's Kiss. Right. Like Vampire's Kiss is just a more polished version of like, do I have this affliction? But it held my interest and it was definitely something I liked about it.
Oh, I was going to say, this is like, it's kind of a different movie at this point.
Yeah, it is.
The weird narrative, like disjointedness of this film did not work for me at all.
Well, we're not that far into the film when we get to the leprosy question.
Oh, we were halfway.
It's about we're halfway through the film.
Or more.
Yeah. So there's still like an hour. Movies, no, Michael,
this
I know.
This movie was an hour and 35 minutes. I looked because it was I had to record how much time I wasted on it.
Yeah.
No, we're like a solid like 45 into the movie when that starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least.
But that's not like changing the movie. It's just the way the story progresses. The leprosy was always going to be the major conflict for Enrico, because if it wasn't there, well, he would have just gotten on the boat and left for his furlough.
Yeah.
Nothing was holding him back. So it was just a way of introducing everything up to this is the issue.
I mean, if it wasn't for him thinking he had leprosy, he would have never ended up back at the village with the father of the woman he raped and killed, curing his infected wound.
Well,
and, you know, then him basically admitting to the father of this girl that he raped and killed her, which was weird.
Yeah, precisely. If he never
and then they build a hut.
Questioned having leprosy, he would have just gone to the camp doctor, gotten some cream on his hand. And gotten on his boat and left for Italy.
Yep.
So the leprosy is the important part. And the story with the girl is just how it gets connected into the story.
I think how I would have fixed this movie in my mind is that all of this stuff that he's doing after he's killed her is this like self-inflection, sort of like I'm trying to make atonement for what I've done. Like, go and meet that guy in the village, but have a language barrier, and he's just like admitting all these things to that guy, and the guy's like, I mean, sure, whatever, I'm gonna help you, but you know, it's not like literally her dad.
Yeah, it never felt super important that
Johannes
was Mariam's
actual dad.
Like, yeah.
I mean, the implication was there.
Sure, but like the odds of all of that are all insane. And, you know, I mean, it's just like that's the part that felt trite to me, where like if it was really about him trying to like clear his soul, that could be interesting, because then it's just him like on a different pathway versus like a forgiveness arc from the literal dad.
Well, but I don't even think that's not something he was actively seeking at that point either, because he didn't go to Italy because he didn't want to be caught, because he thought he was being like chased.
No, he thought he had leprosy and they wouldn't let him back in.
Yeah, right? If that's why he was running.
They sent him to a leper colony.
If he had leprosy, they would have just shot him or sent him to a leper colony. Like, he had no future
in Italy. Yeah.
Yeah. If anybody knew about what was going on with his hand.
But the whole thing with the major, when he catches up with him later, he robs the major because he's trying to bribe his way onto a ship.
Yeah.
To get back to Italy to his wife, where his wife can take care of him and no one will find out he has leprosy.
Exactly. Yeah. But like the whole thing with him, like looking for atonement from the father, that's never part of his like the journey he himself is on. It just happens.
Right. That's what I think is sucky about it.
Yeah. And this could also go back to just the this is how he told the story to Mario, right, was, oh, I went through this whole journey and, you know, through this, I got, you know, forgiveness from the Father. So like, no harm, no foul. And like, oh, I don't have leprosy. So cool.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Like this is all like him saying like, oh, you know, everything's good.
In reality, he would have gotten on that ship anyway, even if they knew that he raped and murdered this native woman, Ethiopian woman, because, you know, colonizers don't give a fuck murder indigenous women.
Literally, like in the beginning, when he tells Mario, Mario's like, well, it doesn't seem like anything we need to tell anybody. It'll just delay your furlough.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You'll just go through these proceedings and they'll be like, eh, no harm, no foul.
Yeah. It just keeps you on. Keeps you on land for one more boat's length. So that was never a concern.
Even his whole redemption arc, even in the end, he's like, I don't even like, who knows if any of that stuff was real?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Because this is Mario telling us what this kind of shady dickhead did and what this shady dickhead told him.
Told him he did. Yeah.
This is the accounting of a terrible person.
I just don't think this movie is made well enough to give it that much credit.
1000% agree.
I would disagree. I think this movie's got a lot to it, and there's some pretty good legs to how it's built. It's just a little unrefined. Like it could have been polished. I think there's a good story to it. I don't have to like the content.
But is it a story that we really need to hear?
No.
Well, we can't pretend like things don't happen just because we don't like them.
But do you really need that? And it's like one thing, like leaving in his other movie, Leaving Las Vegas, where there's a rape scene. That was much more of a important plot piece, mm-hmm. and it wasn't contrived, and it wasn't. Whereas this just felt like, oh, we're gonna rape this woman because we can.
Yeah. It didn't have to be rape.
Yeah.
Because you could take the sexual element out of completely. All of it. And yeah. it could be that he found like solace with this woman in the woods when he's right. lost, and she helps him. She gives him some food. But like they could have had moments that were non-sexual in any way, you know, and he gives her the watch and all that kind of stuff. It all could still work the same way without that. And they just chose that angle. Yeah. And it feels very weird.
Yeah, they could have done a love at first sight thing, but no, they chose rape.
Even take love out of it, you could still have the accidental situation, quote unquote, of shooting her, you know, with the ricochet. If there was just like, oh, well, it's too late to go back to the camp right now. We don't want to be stuck in the woods in the dark. Let's make a little campfire. Like all of it could be there in a normal way. But
and not to say you can't do that. You do have other hurdles in that situation, because why would he have killed her? Like,
well, if he had shot at the thing and it bounced and it hit her in the gut. And
that's the ricochet was the truth.
Well, that's, if it was the truth.
This film is, as I recall from reading the Wikipedia entry after, you know.
Mr. Research here. Wow. Hey,
you know.
Tell us the director's name.
So the reality is I can't remember the director's name. Some Italian guy. I went to this movie. I raw dogged this movie. I didn't look at anything beforehand. The only thing I read beforehand was the description on fucking Amazon Prime. And I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to go watch this. Fine, whatever. And then after it, you know, I looked up on Wikipedia. This movie is actually based on a book.
You know.
And so I'm wondering if the reason there's dual narrators is the book has dual narrators.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Whether that works or not is a different story. I found it a little weird because whose voice am I hearing this through? Whose recount of the story am I listening to? And it seems like in the first half of the movie, it's the recount of Mario and how Enrique is telling Mario what happened. And in the second half, in the sort of quasi redemption arc, it's Enrico telling us what actually happened. And then at the very end, Mario returns and it's, hey, we're all leaving for Italy, so none of this really matters, and I never saw this guy again.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well.
Really unsatisfying
Italian
ending.
Italians.
Yeah.
Okay.
Va bene.
This is a tough one.
Bella Luna.
Bella Luna. Did any of you have a That's quote amore. That you liked from this movie?
Just the have a smoke to the chameleon.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was good. No, not really. I don't think his acting is not great in this film, but there are some like performance choices that are made that are entertaining.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of quotes, Michael, did you have one?
The only one that made me laugh in this whole movie, there's only one that made me even, and it wasn't even laugh, it was a chuckle at best, was, you know, they're
not
drinking
a comedy.
I understand this, right? But you know, they're drinking with the major and he has, oh, do you know this person? And the guy goes, not personally. And they find that absolutely freaking hysterical.
Yeah.
So not personally. No, I don't really have
it. Yeah. There were two that kind of stood out to me. There's one where he's giving her food or trying to. He's, I know you're hungry, so I have something to eat. This is yum, yum, good.
Mwah. That's the kind of like performance I'm talking about.
Yeah, it was very weird for an Italian. And then the other one, when he's with the major at the end, when he's going to rob him, and the major has to go take his, you know, 3:30 shit or whatever.
1530
shit. Sorry.
We're in the military here.
Military. 1530 shit.
European too.
I like that he's just doing it like right by a tree, right next to his buddy.
When you gotta go, you gotta
just
go.
Just right in front of the truck, even.
God, that reminds me of my trip to Mongolia. That's how you had to take a poop in Mongolia.
I get it.
I mean, come on.
You just shit where you shit.
You shit where you shit.
But yeah, then so the major is watching him like walk off after he's been robbed. He says, if this is your idea of a joke, Lieutenant, I order you to come back right here immediately. And it's just, I'm not joking, Major. And then he just says, fuck you.
And fuck off.
Fuck off.
I love that. I love how he also calls him an anti-fascist in that scene.
He's like,
you're an anti-fascist, and tries to shoot him. I took the bullets from your gun. Curses.
Meanwhile, I'm illegally setting up a black market operation in Ethiopia. I'm not an anti-fascist at all.
Yeah.
The major was a great character.
I liked the major.
The major was a lot of fun to watch.
I had a hard time trying to figure out the difference between the Mario and the major. Every once in a while, I would mix them up, especially looking at their IMDb pictures. They aged basically the exact same and look like the same human being.
That's all of Italy.
That's Italian. Oh, also amazing on IMDb, the art for this movie is just like a folded up poster that has all the creases in it and everything. This movie is weird. You cannot find it fucking almost anywhere.
Yeah. I mean,
you found it on probably Freevee on Amazon.
No, for it. I had to pay for it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So not only did you guys waste an hour and 35 minutes
$4
of my time,
of your life.
Yeah. Well, I thought I was going to watch it twice. So I actually bought it at $7.74. So
that would have been a steal.
You guys wasted $7.74 of my money and an hour and a half of my time.
So you get this buzz.
You know, I mean, I get the buzz ball. So, yeah, okay.
You do get sounds 48 like hours
getting closer to an even
to
exchange
to watch a rental.
I will say my favorite part of this film: Nick Cage has an awesome hat when they're going in, like looking for.
He's got the
jungle hat, the pith helmet.
Oh yeah, those are cool.
Yeah,
I always wanted to get Pete a pith helmet because he used to wear that safari shirt all the time, like the brown one with the lapels on it for some fucking reason.
Yeah, you should get him a pith helmet.
I know. I've got
choppers.
A picture of me wearing a pith helmet trying to convince Pete. It's so good.
Ah, fantastic.
I love a good pith helmet.
Okay, so I understand, Sean and Michael, where you guys are. It's not like super high on your list of movies that you liked, but were there things that you did enjoy about the movie?
Okay, so I have to say, you know, right from the beginning, I kind of had mediocre hopes for this movie, because you cut to the scene where he leaves 6 hours for the convoy on his journey, you know, Enrico does. And then the truck crashes and Enrico goes and starts walking to wherever he's walking. And then you cut to the scene where the convoy has left and they're going down the road and they're about to find the crashed truck. And it really reminded me of the scene in the movie Patton about George S. Mm-hmm. Patton in Sicily, driving down this narrow winding road, the whole column of tanks. And it felt like the director was trying to take from that movie. And so I got, oh, hey, wow, this is someone who actually knows movies and can actually produce maybe a good war movie here. And then it just goes downhill from there. So that's like my one good point. It was an interesting
cinematographic moment.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's not a word either.
We're podcasters. Trust us.
Cinematographic.
Yeah. Anyway, it looked good on screen.
So for me, narratively, structurally, just this movie does not hold water for me and kept taking me out of the film, which is largely what I will judge a movie based on the most. Is like, if I have to, like, if I'm critiquing the film while I'm watching it, it's not doing a good job of engaging me. Visually, I will say I did like the cinematography. I can't tell you why it's black and white at the end.
Cinematography.
My assumption is because they wanted to like cut newsreel footage in there and have that match up.
That's exactly why.
But narratively, it does nothing for the film. And it's just like, this is weird. And it just punctuated the, this wasn't made well for me.
Fair enough.
I mean, there's a reason why I got a 28% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like pretty bad Nick Cage movies out there, you know, and so now the next thing that I want to talk about is just sort of like, we didn't really do this back at the beginning, five episodes that you've listened to, but we later got to it with sort of like the matrix of good movie, good Cage performance, bad movie, bad Cage performance. Where good, on that bad, bad, grid? Good. Yeah, thank you, Sean. Where on that grid would you put this dot?
It would be very, very far on the bad movie list. Mm-hmm. And it would be below the line on good, bad Cage performance, but not a lot below. He didn't do a bad job, but he wasn't given much to work with.
Yeah. I mean, he could have done that accent.
Yeah, right.
Again,
yeah.
I have to assume he was asked not to.
Yeah, I like that take. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, he probably tried it, and the Italians just looked at him and were just like, no.
He probably tried and started sounding like my Uncle Sal from New York. Yeah, you know, I mean.
Well, he'd done Moonstruck at this point, right?
Yeah, which is not a good Italian accent.
No, I'm not talking about the accent, but he knew how to do the hand work. He had the hand guide.
Yeah. Well, he only had one hand.
Oh, that's true. This one was static.
Yeah.
Both characters have a weird hand thing.
That's true.
I won't say the performances are like terrible. They're forgettable. Like Nick Cage is ultimately, I feel like, forgettable in this. My one like thought while watching this film was just like, I'm surprised this man became the star he is.
Well,
like, I'm surprised he was given as many chances as he was given some of these films.
Now, you guys obviously know a lot more about Nick Cage than I do, but he strikes me as the actor that just doesn't say no to shit.
Well, yeah. At this point in his career, like, he really didn't have much weight to say no to a lot of things. Like, yeah. The few successes he has had were pretty limited, like, in...
Yeah,
scale
Valley Girl and things like that. Peggy Sue was later.
I'm pretty sure that by 1989, he's already done Moonstruck. He probably could have rejected a Italian directed Italian movie that really probably didn't have a lot of money behind
it.
He
is a cinephile, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's still doing foreign films at this point.
Yeah,
this Greasy Bottom Boys,
mm-hmm.
foreign movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. So at this point, he was a nothing in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was mm-hmm. a star of Valley Girl. He was a character in Rumblefish. Racing with the Moon was his like big Europe part of the star names on this, but he was the lesser star. Cotton Club, he's a bit part. Mm-hmm. Birdie, he's a main, but yeah. That was not like a super hot movie.
No, it's pretty indie for yes. the time.
Boy in Blue was Canadian. Peggy mm-hmm. Sue Got Married did happen before this, so he was in there, but that was nepotism
and a bit of a bit
and part. A weird part. Yeah. Yeah, Raising Arizona, that's the standout, certainly. Mm-hmm. Moonstruck, another standout. Vampire's Kiss should have been a standout but wasn't. And then Time to Kill and our next one, Never on Tuesday, where he plays Man in Red Sports Car.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So he isn't like a star or anything at this point.
Right.
He's had some films. He's had, you know, some like good parts. A bunch of those movies, like, I don't think were critical successes in their time, like when they came out.
Right. Retrospectively, it's different, but
like we look back with the lens of history on our side and we can tell he's going to be a star. But
He's got it.
At the time, like, you know, he was also still trying to be a fairly well-rounded actor at this point. Like, do a foreign film, do some historicals.
And there is still some of that, like, getting out of the shadow of your family name, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
So it's a weird one. I don't disagree with that assessment, but it does kind of make sense in some of the context. Yeah. What you're talking about later is when he was in tax trouble and he did do most movies.
Yeah.
Why does it not surprise me that Nick Cage was in tax trouble?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
When do we watch Tax Trouble?
Tax Trouble.
Oh, it's a musical? Yeah. Shit. Tax Trouble the musical.
Jazz hands.
It's just a whole bunch of T-Rex skulls clanking around.
A missing Superman comic.
Action Comics 1.
A King Cobra loose in the audience.
Yeah, just let it go.
So to get back to the Matrix, I think there could be an interesting film here. I just don't think this is it. But I put Nicolas Cage firmly in kind of mid in this, which for me is kind of the worst thing you could say. You could give the worst review you can give Nick Cage.
Sure.
You know, I'll put his performance in, you know, serviceable. It's good enough. I was never taken aback by his choices or anything in it. And the movie, I'd give it slightly better than, I'd give it like a 5.5. So
yeah, okay. And that's pretty generous. I'm kind of in like movie and performance at the like 35% sort of zone where it's like they're both fine. I can see what was going on here and why it doesn't super light it for me, but different director, different time, different change everything and I might like this movie.
I just like chasing the thought of like I was fairly sure through the whole film that he was not gonna have leprosy, but it's like you have to stick around and be like, well,
what if fucking
yeah, like show me that he doesn't have leprosy, like show me that he does have leprosy,
because yeah, like, it's like he's going through he thinks he has leprosy, yeah. Eventually he's going to find out he just had an infected wound. Mm-hmm. And then what does he do with himself? This is why he was just so unsympathetic, even though the movie was trying to make him a sympathetic character, because y'all knew that he was going to eventually find out he doesn't have leprosy. And then was he going to still be guilty about raping and killing this woman? Or was he going to be a typical colonizer and be like, yeah, OK, great, I raped and killed a native woman, whatever.
And then I went home to my wife.
I would argue that the movie doesn't try to make him sympathetic. It's his recounting of Agreed. The events that makes him.
But that's the plot. That's part of the movie. So it, whether right. or not the direction and everything else tries to make him sympathetic, the plot is trying to make him a sympathetic character.
Yeah, if you buy the plot.
Right. I think that's where what I was saying earlier, like if you had really played up how unreliable a narrator he is, that angle plays, right?
Yeah. If where we had gotten like, some discrepancies. Oh,
he's sympathetic from his own perspective. Of course. And then you look at yeah. it from any outside perspective and you're like, that guy's fucking lying.
This movie could have been like improved a lot by having somebody there to kind of call out the bullshit like once or twice.
Right.
Well, it's like, the doctor tried to call out the bullshit by wanting to make him look at his hand and, you know, yeah, you don't have fingernails. Here's the book on it. You could show that you don't have leprosy, right? You come on, just show me your hand, right? Then that's basically what the doctor was trying to do. And Nicolas Cage was Enrico was so paranoid about having leprosy and then someone asking questions about how you got it, then going being guilty of raping and murdering someone, even though, you know, colonizers don't care about that. You know, it was a little disbelievable that someone even in 1930 wouldn't have realized that, oh, it's my cut that's infected. I don't have leprosy.
Right. So there's room for improvement for sure.
Yeah.
But I like the premise of this film. It's fine. Don't go watch it.
Don't go watch it. It's hard to find anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to know, you can rent it on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's not really that hard. Down. You can rent it on.
It's hard to find it for free.
Okay. It's impossible. I looked.
The Internet
Archive, man. I sent you a link.
I know.
I actually had to boot up the Internet Archive because the Amazon version, which looks like a straight up VHS rip.
Oh, yeah.
Is missing like the last two words. So I wasn't like of the narration. So it's like the movie just cuts off and I was like, How does it, is there more? Was there more lines? I had to get on the internet and
There was. There was like two more words.
And
I watched it via my Xbox. And so I was able to go back to the button that says watch credits. And it was there.
Yeah. If you back out of the like coming up next, like if you back out of the, you know, booting up the next thing, it'll play the last two words.
Oh, it didn't want to do that for me. Like it was just like,
what were the last two words? To kill?
Ever again, probably.
Ever again. Yeah. Because it was like, and we thought we never had to do, it was this ever again.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Because it was that foreshadowing of World War II.
We never had to do.
Yeah.
Also, just the title means nothing.
Time to kill.
I mean,
well, also, if you look for images for this movie, which I have to do because I do the poster art, everything is just like him looking insane with a gun. And I'm like, this is not that movie.
Not at all what this movie is.
No.
The only connection to the title is the closing monologue. It's like, we thought the killing time was over.
Right.
But this movie isn't about them like having to really deal with their atrocities. Like Nick Cage is on his own thing, but I would say that's still largely glossed over in terms of like the plot of this film.
Yeah. Well, so I would, okay. So I think that this is very much a indie Euro sort of film thing, because every individual scene after he gets back to camp from raping and killing this woman, every individual scene is about a moment where he could kill this person to cover up this thing, but doesn't. And so is the person he's interacting with, Enrico is interacting with, worthy of killing? Is it a time to kill?
Not a time to kill.
No, I know, but is it the time to kill?
Just time to kill.
It's right. So, you know, when he's with the doctor, he shoots him, but
at him.
Ostensibly, he purposely misses. Uh-huh. He could have killed Johannes. He could have killed anyone. The major.
He kind of made the major die, though, because the major
does die. He may have made the major die, but he didn't kill him.
I like this light of thought, and I have another take on it.
Okay.
If he would have just not done anything and just killed time and let the days pass, he would have been fine.
Or had he just gone and gotten the frickin' stamp from the guardhouse, he would have been on the first boat, not the next boat.
I do like how every description of this movie really kind of hammers on that whole like dental issue, like
the toothache.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like what gets him out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the first thing in the entire movie. It's like, my tooth fucking hurts. I'm going to go.
Yeah. The toothache is just simply the thing that starts the chain of events.
The inciting incident.
The kill chain.
who are our Patreon supporters?
So thank you to our Patreon supporters. Our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, Bill, and Stuart. And Bill. Our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Nathan, and Cameron. Thank you all for supporting us. Thank you all for listening to this and making it through this pretty rough film. Get ready for a even weirder one next week with basically no Nick Cage in it at all. And thank you to Bill Panks for our intro music, and thank you to Michael for being here and joining us for this.
Hey, no worries. I'm gonna now go give a chameleon a cigarette just because.
Hey man, have a smoke.
And thanks to Buzz Balls for making Buzz 1.5 liter balls.
Repulsive.
I mean, we're definitely feeling better now.
That's true. That's true.
It's doing fine for me.
I'm so glad I'm in Portland.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Are they expensive?
I mean, they gotta be $30 each, right?
No, no. I mean, like, after tax, it's like $23 each.
Yeah. So. That's, okay, more than I was expecting.
Still, to be rung up and be like, here's your $69 worth of Buzz Balls. It's like, God, my life sucks.
What have I done?
It's like, yeah, give me a bag. I don't need to be seen transporting my biggie balls.
It looked like you were carrying a ball full of bowling balls when you came in, or a bag full of bowling balls when you came in.
Yeah, you know, I spent all my money on a really good bowling ball. I couldn't get the bag to go with it.
Exactly. Just a plastic piece of shit.
You know, just carry them right at your crotch, and if anyone asks, say you have elephantitis.
Yeah, these are my biggie balls.
Oh, before we get started, I just want to share the Nicolas Cage drag show was a delight. It went through the whole oeuvre of his work, starting with Moonstruck and a very suggestive use of a baguette. But to unbearable weight of massive talent, the performer did do a whole thing to the Boston Cop monologue from the beginning, and it was spectacular.
That is pretty good. Did they cover Time to Kill?
No.
Doesn't sound very complete.
No. But sounds lazy. They did do a ghostwriter. There was an awesome Big Daddy from Kick-Ass, which was a standout. Mm. And then, Croods? Of course, my favorite one was Face Off, which all I will say is the Travolta box will haunt me the rest of my living days.
I think I've decided officially that I don't want to know what that means ever.
Yeah, I'm fair glazing over that one.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let your minds run rampant with it.